catch us up from where this started. This incident or alleged incident happened May in 2016. What happened exactly?
So as many of us know, most of us know in the county, Trump decided to host one of his rallies up here in Linden back in May 2016. Many of us in the community decided that we wanted to do something to, you know, voice our concerns against him being here and being in the county, and just his rhetoric in general, not only on just hate, but the fact that that rhetoric has really fueled hate in our community and really escalated a lot of violence against our people that already existed, especially against people of color. And so there was a big community that did an action, and three of us were arrested for blocking the Guide Meridian Road. We created a blockade, and we still are being prosecuted for that. We finally have our trial coming up next Monday, the 9th. And so that's what we're here to talk about.
And it wasn't just the three of you who were blocking the road. Is that correct?
It was just the three of us, but we had a lot of people surrounding us. Only three of us were locked down. And there was a lot of people that were rallying next to us and supporting us and making sure that those that were angry weren't able to come and, you know, attack us.
And so there's been some question about the evidence in terms of the arrest. And I know that there have been a couple of requests to maybe dismiss this case. Tell me about what happened in terms of the people, the officials who were making the arrest. Were they filming you or were they not? Were you on camera?
So it was hard to tell for me as someone who was very distracted on, you know, trying to make sure that everyone was okay and that there was a big reaction against us. However, it seemed like there was police obviously recording not only through video cameras, but with their cars as well. We asked for evidence pretty early on and the prosecution kept delaying. And it seems like that evidence was eventually destroyed. Which just shows how scared they are to be able to admit that they were wrong in prosecuting people who are trying to, you know, have their right to a free speech.
So your defense team asked for the footage.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, when they didn't actually destroy it originally, they just delayed. And then they destroyed it later?
Yeah, and so we have some great lawyers who are part of the community, and they, you know, immediately filed for all the evidence that they could that we needed, and they kept delaying, and it wasn't until December that we said, you know, this evidence still hasn't been brought to us, and that was when it was brought to our attention that it had been destroyed, if it even had existed.
But the judge did not accept that as a cause for dismissal of the case.
No, the judge has been extremely biased, I believe. At first, you know, you think that the judge is going to be impartial. And that's what, you know, when you watch Law and Order or you watch Dateline, like you think that the judge is going to be impartial. But in reality, the prosecutor hasn't really had to do a lot of work, it seems like.
You were compelled to join the group that was protesting Trump. Tell me a little bit about your personal or your political passions for doing so.
Sure. I'm the daughter of two undocumented Mexican immigrants. I grew up with my mom being an activist for immigrant rights. And so I kind of grew up around political activism. And, you know, seeing Trump's rhetoric against not only Mexican people, but against Muslims, against all immigrants, against people in the LGBTQ community, especially being a queer person myself, I felt very compelled to let people know in this community that, you know, I'm not going to stand for this, especially being new to the community. I've only lived here about 2 or 3 years. But I thought it was ridiculous that, you know, this community would allow a guy as stupid and as hateful as him to come and fuel more anger into our community that already faces a lot of problem.
And I hear that. And I also would hear other people in the community maybe say, well, doesn't he have a right to free speech?
I think that, you know, that's an interesting argument, because when we talk about free speech, we have to remember what that's really based on and what the Constitution was founded on, what the country was founded on, which was hate and bigotry and genocide and enslavement of people of color. So I think that it's important to note that, you know, people of color's voices and opinions have been dismissed, disregarded, and legally, like, put down and oppressed for so long that it's important for our voices to be at the forefront and for the issues that have been impacting us for centuries and centuries to really, you know, come to an end. And that's what we're talking about.
So some countries or many countries have hate speech laws, and that is seen as something that might protect people but can also be abused. The United States does not have hate speech laws. Do you think that that's something we should have as a country?
Oh, definitely. And I think that'd be very difficult because, again, the country is founded on hate. But I think that it is important because so many people have been let off just because they have a right to protect themselves or to free speech, such as, you know, Trayvon Martin, how his killer was able to, you know, because he was scared, he was able to kill a young boy. So it's things like that that I think really prevent us from being able to take those kind of laws into account.
So this is an interesting case because it's been charged as a misdemeanor.
Mm-hmm.
So you were blocking the road that he was going to be traveling down. Is that?
No, we mostly wanted to make a statement. We knew it wasn't possible to find out where he was coming through. You know, there's a lot of little roads down in Linden. But it was mostly about the message. That's what mostly we wanted to get out. And it was mostly for the community as well, because, you know, Trump doesn't really listen to people, obviously. And so it was mostly about getting the message out in a way that was inconvenient for people. And you know what? We want to notice that or let people know that inconvenience really is not any sort of harm. And it seems like the county wants to make political speech into a type of harm in the community when it's really not that. It's just an inconvenience for people because they're not used to it.
Well, we've certainly seen that with State Senator Doug Erickson.
Mm-hmm.
And he had something to do with bringing this case to trial. Is that correct?
I'm not quite sure about that, but I do know that he did after we were beginning our hearings. He brought in that law that would essentially make it a federal crime and a felony to, you know, do any kind of action that would impede economic stability, something like that. But it was essentially criminalizing our right to free speech.
So this connects with other incidents or other situations that have happened in our county in the past year. I was on the freeway as part of the freeway post protest with Red Line Salish Sea.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, that has recently come up with a groundbreaking historical Facebook warrant.
Mm-hmm.
But the situations are somewhat similar. There is a time-honored tradition in protest being disruptive to bring attention. At the same time, there's a time-honored tradition of people knowing that they broke a state or city law in order to do that and then serving time sort of nobly. Do you think that there's a difference in the way that these cases are being fought, that you're fighting this case?
Well, I think that they're both the same, as in they both, you know, are targeting free speech. And it's really, we want to do it in a way that inconveniences people and really makes people think. You know, when I was on the blockade at Trump's rally, someone said, "Why can't you just sign, like hold a sign on the side of the road?" And I was thinking, you know, would you really look at that? And would you still not yell at me if I was holding a sign on the side of the road? And, you know, I think that it's also interesting that our case is being used as a model against the blockade that happened on the freeway as well. I think that it's being used as an excuse because people were really angry because of that blockade. But I think that the community's response is really an indicator of just how much hate there still is in our community. And I think that also the way that they're targeting myself and the other people on our case, I'm a third-year student with a 3.6 GPA. I've never had any run-ins with the law. I'm a model citizen, and yet they're still treating me as if I really did break a law and that I don't have the right to free speech. And so, you know, sitting in the courtrooms and especially watching all these different cases go by in our hearings, I just wonder how they must treat people who do have a lot of run-ins with the law. I'm very light-skinned, white-passing. How do they treat, you know, people of color, darker people, black people, people who don't speak the language. There's been cases of people who need interpreters. And so I think this really connects to the bigger picture that not only are people who are model citizens who are just trying to have their free speech rights heard being prosecuted, but as well, how does this connect to how people of color who do have run-ins with the law are treated? And, you know, it is a question. The criminal court always thinks, the judge keeps telling us, the jury's not going to tell you, they're not going to ask why you did this, but did you do it or not? And that's the problem with this criminal justice system. They don't ask why do people do what they do. And we see a lot of times that people have to commit crimes because of their survival needs, because of poverty, because of lack of education, all these kind of problems. And so I think that that's the bigger issue that arises with this, is that the criminal justice system doesn't say why do people do what they do. It's just, do they do it or not?
Right. And then in some instances, I think that does come into play, whether somebody's charged for murder or manslaughter. Sometimes that like, what are the reasons behind it, or mm-hmm. or if it's self-defense. So it's interesting that you bring up that is not the case when it comes to protest. Mm-hmm. One other aspect I wanted to bring up was I remember reading that you were threatened, or the people who were there were threatened. And can you tell me a little about that?
I can't remember exactly what it was, but we did have an instance where we were there that one person did come and essentially try to push over the ladders that we were in. And since we were locked down to the ladders and I was locked down to the other two people, it really posed a threat against us that we would have been very hurt. And I was actually almost injured by the police when they kind of dragged us off. So it was a lot of, there was a lot of quite a bit of threats in there that were, you know, possible. And we knew going into it what kind of possibilities there were. But, you know, overall, we wanted to make sure that, you know, this kind of rhetoric wasn't present, and or at least there was a big fight against the rhetoric that was being brought into our community.
As to the anti-protesters who were threatening you or harassing you, they were arrested too?
No, actually. The police was really bad at de-escalating. There was quite a few people that, you know, first they were saying, we aren't going to the rally, you know, why aren't you letting us through? And then at the end they were shouting, Trump, Trump, Trump. They climbed all over the cars. They started, you know, bouncing and jumping on the cars, keying the cars. And the police was just kind of standing there more concerned about trying to get us off of the Guide Meridian.
So it would seem that the fact that you were arrested and Nia was arrested and the Whatcom Three were arrested, and yet people who were physically threatening you were not charged at all, sort of supports your perspective.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm thankful that, you know, we had people who were there to protect us as well, because of the incident where the man came and tried to knock down our ladders. You know, the people who were yelling at us and who were trying to come and agitate us, but we had people there who were not the police, who were able to de-escalate, which was very lucky.
Josefina, is there anything else that you think the public or our community should know?
Sure. You know, these actions are very important in our community, and I think that my case is only one of many that exist around the country, and, you know, there's a whole history to civil disobedience and to direct actions. And I think that, you know, we can't be criticizing people who put their records, their lives on the line for us and for our rights. And so I really appreciate people who are able to come to the courthouse on Monday, the 9th. Our trial starts at 1:30 p.m. We also have a Facebook event for people who want to look up, I think, Imagine No Cages is a Facebook page that puts it together. So yeah, thank you so much for having me and for giving me the space to, you know, talk about my story, and hopefully a story that connects with a lot of other people around the county and the country.